Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now, back in April of 2021, my next guest gave what was his exit interview on this programme. He decided at the time to resign his seat in the Dáil after a decade in the job. And he's now written this really honest account of his time in office and about his decision to leave politics. The book is called Running from Office: Confessions of Ambition and Failure in Politics. It's certainly an eye-opener and a page-turner. And Owen Murphy is here with me now. Hello.
Hi, good morning.
You're very welcome. Thank you for being with us. Do you know what? I was thinking back to that day in 2021 when you were in talking about your decision to leave politics. Like, what I didn't know at the time is that you, and is it fair to say this, you were in a fairly bad place at that time?
Yeah, and I suppose I should start with an apology because I wasn't very honest with you at the time. And you were very good to me and I should have given you more. But I suppose I was embarrassed about why I was leaving politics and a bit ashamed as well. But I was quite desperate to get out. So I was trying to move very quickly, have the exit interview and then leave. And that's actually where the book kind of started for me in my head. Because, you know, at the very beginning, I'm kind of dwelling on, you know, I've just left politics and I haven't been honest about why and what went wrong. Because I entered with such ideas and ambitions and idealism. And then that whole journey through, very successful, very quickly, and then kind of failing equally as quickly and then finding myself leaving. So that's kind of how the book starts and ends with that interview.
Like, would you say, looking back now, that you had a breakdown?
Yeah, my therapist is terrible with me on this because she feels I don't kind of give enough about in terms of talking about it, because I always talk about it as panic attacks. The reason I don't say breakdown, but it was a breakdown, is because I still felt I retained some sense of myself, that I was, you know, desperate and having these difficulties, but I knew that I was having them and I was embarrassed about having them. So I still had a degree of self-awareness. And I'm not sure in a proper breakdown or a full breakdown if people retain that self-awareness. But I definitely had some moments of crisis where I lost control to enough of a degree that it scared me. And I knew that I'd need to try and leave politics as quickly as possible. But actually, leaving it is tougher than you think.
So you weren't sleeping. You found it difficult to leave your office at times because you felt the minute that you walked out that door, you had to be on.
Yeah, it's a job. Like, politics is a fantastic job because of the things that you can do. But it's more than a job. I talk about it in the book being a vocation. It becomes who you are. Every interaction you have with a person, even to a degree, kind of friends and family. Every time you're out in public, which becomes all of the time, really, you're there for the people, your public property. And so I found it very difficult, as my profile rose, to navigate that world of being visible, of being, you know, people approaching me and wanting to talk to me. And then when I became very unpopular and was making lots of mistakes, all of that getting amplified through the media and social media. And my mistake was not to catch myself and ignore that stuff or deal with it properly, and not to be more open with people around me about how I was experiencing things. But again, I was embarrassed about it. I felt I should be more resilient. I felt that maybe it's a kind of a macho idea. I know I'm a politician. I'm taking these decisions. This is an important role. So I've got to be tough about this. And even if I'm not being tough internally, I've got to present a toughness. And then you're also kind of ashamed about it as well, because, you know, relative to the problems that I was dealing with in terms of the things that we were trying to do for people, it kind of paled in comparison to what people were actually going through. Okay. So you feel like this isn't a real problem, though, and cop on, get yourself together, get back out there and keep going.
And do the things that you explained you wanted to do.
We'll
come to that in a minute. But there was one scene in the book which I found really impactful, that meeting you had with Leo Varadkar when you told him that you wanted out.
Yeah.
And you had it all planned in your head how this was going to go. And what happened?
I just lost it. I mean, spoiler alert, there's a lot of crying in this book, unfortunately, okay? And I would always try to, I suppose, present myself as not being that kind of person. But actually, I went into the room, into his office. I had been trying to leave for quite a while. And there's a couple of instances in the book where I'm just ready to go. And I've got my exit committee, I've got my plan, and it doesn't happen. But I'd finally decided, because a government was being put together, and it was the last thing I wanted was to be in government. Not that I probably would have been, to be fair.
You felt that he was going to shuffle you.
I know. I mean, it probably would have been my advice to him at the time. It's like,
don't give me a job.
I'm burnt out. I am, you know. But I also knew that I wanted to leave politics completely. And I knew that when it looked like a government was going to be formed, I had to go and tell him. And so I eventually built up the courage to do that. I was sitting in his office, in the Taoiseach's office. It was about 3 years after I had sat there and he had pointed me to his cabinet. So much had passed in between, even our relationship had changed and all these things, and the enormity of it really hit me, because I'd gone into politics with all these great ideas about what I would do if I ever got that kind of responsibility. And I felt like it had all come crashing down, and now I was heading for the door, and I was trying to tell him that, but I couldn't get the words out. So I got a bit emotional. And then I got worried that he thought I was coming begging for a job. So then I kind of composed myself and kind of said it to him straight, look, I've got to go.
And how did he react to that when you were sitting there in your emotional state? What was his response?
I think he just thought it was a passing moment of doubt or a crisis of confidence. And what he didn't know was that I'd had a number of these crises building up to that point.
Because you mentioned your relationship has changed. You weren't close at this point.
We weren't as close as we had been.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, actually, and we got close again after, when he went into government and I went to the backbenches, we got close again, because I think then it was easier for us to talk about things, because I could give maybe a different perspective, but also I was more honest with him. People can be in a relationship. It's a two-way thing. And if I wasn't being honest with him about how I wasn't managing the job, then why would he be more open with me about other things?
Yeah, so you did have you described this big row that you had him, which ended up with the two of you standing up shouting at each other, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Is that when he said to you, maybe the things people are saying about you are true?
Yeah, so I mean, like, I got to a very difficult space in my head where I was interpreting everything as an attack, even a joke. And I was doubting, even, you know, I could sense people doubting my judgment, I was doubting my own judgment. And we were trying to figure a particular issue out. There were problems on different fronts. We were trying to prepare for an election campaign. And we just kind of got into it. And so it was a very difficult conversation.
That wasn't a joke.
About?
When he said that to you.
No, but like
maybe the things people are saying about you are true.
Well, we were fighting with each other. And people say mean things when they're fighting with each other. And we were two colleagues and two friends who were kind of having a go at each other. And I was coming from a position where I felt very embattled, and I felt that, you know, there was probably a bit of self-pity on my side. And he probably saw this and was like, listen, mate, you're not the only person having problems here. Mm-hmm. We're all trying to get stuff done. We're all getting criticized for it. It's a minority government. We're not really kind of controlling things like we want to.
Yeah, I suppose it wasn't really an expression of confidence in you, though. I mean, you must have felt that either the writing is on the wall here, or maybe you felt he crossed a line.
It was like... It was definitely a low point for me. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I went away from that. It did G me up a bit as well, though, because, you know, I felt that I still had something to prove, clearly. So, I talk about it in the book, like, I go up and down at times. So there's times where I've got to leave. And there's other times where I'm like, you know what? I'm going to fight this out because I still believe in the things that we're trying to do. And I'm going to prove people wrong.
Yeah, and so you mentioned ideology there a couple of times when we've been chatting. But just from reading the book, I wondered where the ideology was when you knew you wanted to go into cabinet. But it was just you wanted to be there. Like, I didn't get a sense that you wanted to be there to achieve something. Like, you certainly didn't want to, you didn't look at housing and go, I want to fix that problem. You just wanted to be in cabinet.
Yeah, and so I talk about that in the book, like, when I went into politics at first, you know, my ambitions were just to be in Parliament.
Yeah.
And I loved my first Dáil term because I loved kind of speaking against my own government and standing away from the status quo. And I had no ambitions about promotion. Other colleagues, that's what they wanted. And so they were staying on side with Enda Kenny. They were, you know, doing those kinds of things. I took a different approach. I just wanted to be there and to be honest and true. Mm-hmm. But then that ambition thing changes a bit when you get a bit of a taste of it. And I talk about this. I get promoted to a junior minister in 2016 under Enda Kenny. And all of a sudden, government is unlike anything else in politics.
And you're thinking those pesky backbenchers.
Yeah, absolutely. And now
so you've changed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then I see there's an opportunity to go up to cabinet. And that's what I want. And I talk about this like right near the beginning of the book. I just wanted to be at that table. I wanted to have the decision-making power and then do something good with that. But I wasn't going with a particular mission for health or for housing or for education. I felt that I had earned that spot and I wanted to be there. And then when I got there, I was given housing and very quickly decided, right, I'm going to do something with this that people haven't done before. But my getting there, you know, the ambition thing changes. And I don't think that's a healthy thing.
Yeah, but you weren't allowed to do what you wanted to do. And you explain this phenomenon of the big three.
Yeah.
Which was Leo Varadkar, Pascal Donoghue and the Attorney General at the time, and you went in with your big ideas. You wanted NAMA to be involved and you wanted there to be a right to housing in the Constitution.
Yes.
They said absolutely not.
Well, no, but yes, but it's not about the individuals, the point I'm trying to make in the book. I'm not trying to criticise those three people. I mean, each of them individually were
well, it's
incredibly
really important
supportive.
For us to know about this because we have been told Fine Gael, when everybody knew housing was in crisis, that it was Fine Gael's priority to fix this and to sort it out. But it wasn't because you went in there with your plan and they said no.
Well, I mean, the point I'm trying to make in the book is that there's a structure within government that isn't the cabinet, that is more powerful than the cabinet. And actually, your success or failure as a minister depends on how you deal with that structure. And it's not the individual office holders on their own. It's the departments, it's the permanent government as well. You can't do anything as a minister unless the lawyer says it's legal, unless the money people are going to give you the money to do it, and unless the boss says it's okay. And so my challenge was to try and bend that structure to my will, the things I wanted to do, but I couldn't. And that was one of the big mistakes I made early on. And that hung over me after that. So that's the point I'm trying to draw out from the book, is that that's what's, you need, like for a minister, you need to be able to manage that group of people. And it's not the cabinet.
Yeah.
The cabinet's where you formally make decisions. But I didn't need to win over my cabinet colleagues to get stuff done because we didn't really have those kinds of discussions.
It was the big three.
Yeah. And again, I mean, just like on the book isn't about Fine Gael and government. It's about what happens when you are in government.
Right.
The challenges you face and what happens to individuals as well.
Owen O'Brien was, the Sinn Féin spokesperson, was asked to review the book for the Irish Times. Now, he did say that you had courage to lay bare your time in office and it's done future ministers a service and so on. But he said your naivety, lack of political experience, shallow political base and even shallower understanding of housing policy made your failure inevitable and that you should never have been appointed as Minister for Housing. What do you think of that?
That's lovely. I mean, look, I've written a book. I've been honest about the challenges that I faced. I've talked a little bit about some of the things that I did or tried to do, but the book isn't meant to be a defense of my time in housing. It's not meant to be something to try and restore a reputation or to take shots at other people. I thought that, you know, if I wrote this properly and wrote it in a way that people enjoyed reading it, they might learn a bit more about how politics works and who the people are, who our politicians are, because, you know, not to kind of sound too kind of lofty and ambitious about things, but there's a big distance between our public and our politicians, and it's only growing. And I thought if I could give a proper insight, it might help just kind of narrow that gap a little bit. And so I've written this book, and if people want to come to their own conclusions, they absolutely can. Mm-hmm. But one thing that I hope is clear from the book is that, you know, being a minister is a hard job. There are lots of challenges. People shouldn't try and pretend that it's easy. You know, because there's a lot more going on than they realize, actually. And oftentimes, the difficulties you have aren't with the opposition. They're actually internal in terms of trying to manage that big machine and get it to do what you want it to do.
Well, is the book a call for more honesty in politics then? Like, had you been more yourself as Minister for Housing, would the story have been different?
Perhaps. I don't know. But, I mean, like, I run the what-if game sometimes if I'd have said this or done that. But the problem we have in politics, and look, everyone's talking about an election across the pond at the moment, is that there is a desperation for more authenticity and such a desperation that people will even go to a liar because they think it's authentic. And I think there's a problem in our politics that maybe there isn't enough honesty from politicians. And if this book can help some politicians be a bit more honest about things, great. But also if it can help people understand a bit better what's really going on inside, that'd be great too.
You talk about some of the things that impacted you. Sinn Féin making that ad on the van, which had the picture of you, and it said, "Don't blame me, it's just Murphy's Law." That seemed to really impact you. Dara O'Brien, when Fianna Fáil were in Confidence and Supply, said that you were too cosseted to understand housing issue. He, of course, is the housing minister now. Why did those things affect you so much?
I took things very personally when I shouldn't have. I let the criticisms bite too hard and I didn't manage my mental health. And I felt working so hard and giving it everything and trying to get the right things done. And I had been, to a large degree, ignoring the criticism because I was trying to think, look, we've got a longer term plan here and I don't want to be, you know, battered by the day-to-day criticisms that come. But eventually, I talk about this in the book, there's a moment where I decide, because I get advice from people, like I need to kind of change tack in terms of how I'm managing the brief, how I'm communicating it, that I need to go and actually see, well, what do people actually think? And that's when this spiral occurs. I start to read what's in the papers. I start to read on social media, the comments, everything. And
so you were reading all of that?
Yeah.
I just wonder, when Dara O'Brien said that about you being too cosseted, did it hurt? Because was there an element of truth in it?
No. What? That because of...
Because you... And you say this in the book. You come from a middle class upbringing. You know, South Dublin and so on. That maybe you didn't understand it.
I gave every... I mean, what do we want from our politicians? I mean, it depends. It's a question. Like, I mean, do we want to decide that their background should be disqualifying factors? I mean, I never hid where I was from. I mean, I was very honest about where I'm from. Mm. I've had great opportunities. And one of the things that I wanted to do going into politics, because it was how I was raised, was to see if I could help people have the opportunities that they weren't having that I had had. I think that's a good motivation for public service. And I believe in public service. And I think that, you know, we shouldn't be focused so much on our politicians' backgrounds, but on what they're actually trying to do and what they're saying. And so what were the things I was trying to do in housing in terms of actually getting more social housing built or setting up the Land Development Agency, you know? But so to, I understand we're in an era of personality politics, so it's an effective attack. And it was effective in a way. And I took it personally, and I shouldn't have. Of all the things you're going to take personally, that's not something you really need to pay too much attention to. But for me, it all became intertwined with the criticism of how I was doing the job, but also of who I was.
Yeah.
And the more I read, the more I believed it myself.
And it wasn't just what you were reading, it's what you were experiencing, right? Because there were a couple of incidents which you detail in the book where people came up to you, sometimes when you were with other people, with your family, with your friends, with a partner, and they were really uncomfortable things, weren't they, those incidents?
Yeah, and so I started to kind of withdraw from public life as much as I could in terms of I'd do the public events I had to do. But if I wasn't doing them, I wasn't really leaving the flat that I was living in or leaving my office. I'm not the only one who experienced that stuff. I mean, that's why I talk about it, because it's still going on and politicians still experience those things. And so I talk about it because I want to give people a fair picture of perhaps just what it is like being a politician, just the kind of the, what our current politicians are putting themselves through to do their public service.
How would you describe those experiences? You know, when people comes up, someone comes up and shouts in your face, is it frightening, or does it just send you the message, look, I cannot live my life the way I used to live anymore?
I mean, it can be scary depending on the type of confrontation, and there were some scary confrontations. It can be very emotional when people are very direct and very brutal, and you carry it away with you, or at least I did. And I started to believe it. You know, there's a line in the book where, you know, when enough people tell you that you should be ashamed of yourself, you start to believe them and you become ashamed of yourself. So, and this was another, you know, me just not keeping my mental health in check. And, you know, difficult situations that I didn't really navigate well at the time, and all culminated in, I guess, a breakdown in London, where I was, you know, and again, it speaks to the title, I was literally running away from my job.
So this
and from
is when
myself.
You went to London for a night with colleagues, wasn't it?
Yeah, we went on a 24-hour bender. I mean, to get away from the pressure of work, to go somewhere where we were anonymous. And we all kind of finished the night early enough, and I couldn't sleep because I wasn't sleeping. And I went out and I went around to the student halls I used to live in, and I kind of just got caught up in my own head. And had a panic attack, I suppose, or a breakdown. And
you were taking sleeping pills. You say you were going to a couple of different GPs for them.
Yeah, because, I mean, if the GP's doing its job, they're not going to give you too many. But
they weren't working, obviously.
They weren't working. And I just, you needed more to try and see if they could work. And absolutely, sleep deprivation is a cumulative thing. So it does build up. And I got to a place where I was just physically and mentally exhausted by that stage. That was December of 2018. I'd just come through the no confidence motion. I'd come through a whole lot of other things. I'd really come to this crisis point myself in terms of my confidence in myself and the job. And everything was going, it seemed at that point, so badly wrong for so many people who were kind of depending on me to kind of fix things. So it all kind of became too much for me. And that was kind of around the time where I decided I need to start thinking about getting out of this job, because what just happened in London, it could happen again, but it could happen in an even more uncontrolled way. Mm-hmm. And that scared me. And then other things happened. You know.
So you stayed in for another little while after that incident, didn't you?
I stayed in, yeah. And then we got to about, when the homeless numbers officially hit 10,000, I decided it was time to resign. And I put together an exit committee, and I put together a plan. And all I had to do was go to Leo, and I was going to resign from office. But something in my personal life intruded. I had to put those plans on hold. And by the time that I could go back to that plan, it was too late because the local elections were coming. And I didn't want to resign in a way that would damage all those candidates. So I held on, and then I dug deep to find some resolve to kind of recompose myself and get back in the fight, which I did, but a little reluctantly. I mean, like, you know, the book jumps back and forth in time between my time as it's kind of failing as a minister, but also the success I'm having as a young backbencher, as a young politician in campaigns, moving up to try and kind of show that kind of trajectory in politics that people can have, and also the good times and the opportunities and the things that you can do. I'm trying to kind of give a whole perspective of a political career.
You've reminded me now of the team that you had right from the beginning when you were elected as a councillor, when you first decided you were going into politics. They stuck with you the whole way through. Yeah, some of them were disappointed in you at the end. Is that a fair characterisation?
Yeah, like, I mean, there was a moment I remember meeting someone from one of my first campaigns on the street who'd been super enthusiastic about me getting into politics and everything else, and he could barely look at me because what he had seen of me since becoming a minister was either what was being portrayed in the media or what I was portraying of myself through social media. I mean, my God, I look back at some of the tweets that I did and they're cringe. It's embarrassing. You know, I'm trying to project.
What about the cow?
Yeah.
Does that come to mind where you said, I didn't know this is where the milk from my latte came from.
Yeah. You know, and I was thought that was hilarious, you know, but I was an idiot. So, you know, people were really concerned about what was happening in housing. I hadn't brought a coherent plan because I'd wanted to, but I had let myself kind of be persuaded not to actually announce something, my mistake, but I hadn't brought a coherent plan. People were wondering what was going on, and I'm running around in my togs, tweeting about cows and going for swims and, you know, doing all this stuff. And I didn't understand at the time just what a massive mistake I was making in my presentation.
You can see now why I would ask you that question about, you know, Dara O'Brien saying that you were too cosseted. It was almost the image that you were portraying. I have a lovely life here.
I know. I mean, unfortunately, I don't have a time machine to go back, and I could have deleted all my tweets, but then I wouldn't have had them for the book. But yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, so like, the book is a catalogue of mistakes that I made in the hope that others don't make them. And one mistake was how I presented myself and the work that I was doing to the public, because I wasn't doing it well at all. And I was leaving myself open to massive criticism.
Yeah, there was a couple of things that I had to sort of reread again. There's one line about describing the Dáil as a workplace where you get drunk in a couple of times a week, at least a couple of times a week.
Yeah.
That, how can that be right?
Yeah.
I read that sentence, I think, three times, because it is really, I think for most of us looking in, we just wouldn't get that, but it's normalised in the book.
Yeah, it was absolutely a thing. And it always reminded me of my kind of, I did an arts degree up the road in UCD, and you kind of finish your lectures at 11 o'clock. You're like, what do we do now? And they're like, oh, there's a bar on campus. Oh, great. But you're a student, so that's fine. But the Dáil bar, which is like run by really great people, it's kind of the fulcrum of political life. Mm-hmm. It's not just a bar. There's food served and teas and coffees. But eventually 3 o'clock becomes 4 o'clock, 4 o'clock becomes 5 o'clock. And someone's like, listen, will we get a pint in? Because people are up from the country and they're not going home that night. You've got a late vote. So you're going to have a pint. And when I was in as a first time, there was so many backbenchers without jobs. And there was a lot of alcohol to it, a lot of alcohol to it. And I, you know, that can't be healthy. And when I talk in the book about the unfortunate passing of Shane McEntee, really around that time I saw it, about how we didn't respond, any of us as individuals or collectively, to what had happened to him. And we kind of just kept up with the drinking and the stuff and all that kind of
thing. And has anyone responded to what has happened to you?
I mean, I've had some lovely messages from colleagues, but I mean, like, what I want people to take from the book is you know, more of an understanding of who our politicians are and what politics is. Some people have sent some lovely texts going, sorry, Owen, I didn't know you were going through that. If I did, I would have been more supportive. But that's not what I'm looking for, actually. You know, that's not why I wrote the book. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's very kind of people. But I, like, the fault was mine for not being more honest. People were there to support me if I'd reached out to them, but I didn't.
Mm-hmm. Would you ever go back? Would you ever try again?
No.
You're done?
No. I mean, you know, I've said it. In the round, I really enjoyed my political career, but at the end of it, in the second half of being a minister, I got completely burnt out because I didn't look after myself properly. And by the end of it, then I just lost my passion. And so I'm very grateful for the privilege of being able to do it. But I think that in the modern world, you can only do it for so long. And I don't think it's unrelated that so many people aren't running again in this next election. People who had office and who've been there for a long time, because, you know, it's a very public-facing role. Mm-hmm. You deal with people in very difficult circumstances, and you can only carry that kind of pressure, I think, for such a period of time.
And you're back in Ireland to talk about the book, but you don't live here anymore. Tell people what you're doing now.
No, well, I was back from Tbilisi, Georgia, where I was observing their elections for the past 2 months. So I do that a couple of times a year. I'll go to a country, either in the Caucasus or Central Asia, to observe their elections, and report back on that. And home is in London, where I moved to after I left politics. And London's a great city, and it's not too far away. So lots of people kind of come to London or I pop back the odd time. But it was something I needed to do when I left politics, was I needed to leave the country to really get some space and distance to kind of reflect on, look, what went wrong here? How did I find myself, you know, sitting in a studio with Claire Byrne, lying to her about why I was leaving politics and doing it when I still had maybe more to do, or I felt like I hadn't done enough? And that's what kind of began the book off in terms of charting that journey from naive, ambitious, young TD to ups and downs to into cabinet to being given this big problem and saying, right, I'm going to give this everything and I'm going to succeed. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was so confident that I would succeed. And then things start to unravel. And then I start to unravel. And then I'm just looking for the exit. So that was, you know, me writing the book. It was quite cathartic in that way, but yeah. I hope that there'd be some insights for people in it as well.
Well, thanks for coming back and telling us the truth. We really appreciate it. and the book is, I found it riveting, and it's a real page turner. I couldn't put it down. It's a really good read. Owen, thanks for talking to us about it. It's called Running from Office. It's out now, written by Owen Murphy, and the subtitle is Confessions of Ambition and Failure in Politics. We'll take a break.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.